Hello and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard, and this is a podcast about the cryptocurrency ecosystem. Today, I'm excited because I got to talk to John Piotrowski of the Ocean Protocol. This is a DEX built on top of the 0x protocol. They're a relayer. I really went into this just wanting to talk to somebody that was building a relayer on top of 0x to get their insights about what they're thinking about, the challenges building a DEX and whatnot. And we dug into so much more than I anticipated. I really enjoyed the call. I was extremely impressed how much they're focusing on providing liquidity, which has always been what we've talked about on this show as one of the toughest elements to manage and one of the most in-demand things that a trader wants out of a DEX. So I think you'll enjoy getting John's perspective on focusing on liquidity first and also the way they're approaching regulation. It's a really great chat, It did get pretty long, so I hope you'll stick with us, but it's worth every minute. Just really was interesting to hear what he had to say about this whole ecosystem from a regulatory standpoint and exchanges and everything that exchanges are facing today. Hey, if you like this show, I hope you'll support our partner, Delta. The Delta Portfolio app is the best way to track your cryptocurrency portfolio. You can track Bitcoin, altcoins, ICOs. I really love Delta Pro. If you go to ledgerstatus.com/Delta, it'll take you to their website where you can learn more about it. You can use Delta on any operating system, whether you're on Android or iOS. Their mobile apps are terrific. Or you can use their desktop apps, which you may not know about, on both Windows and Mac. They just had some great updates, including a all-black night theme for their pro customers, but that's just icing on the cake for what you get for the pro version of Delta. The pro version of Delta really is a winner because you get exchange sync, which is huge, and multi-portfolio management. So I manage actually three different portfolios, my main portfolio, the 100X Trading Challenge portfolio, and my children's portfolio. I have a small crypto fund that I run for them, and I can manage all those separately. I can do exchange sync on one of them, but not and do the other one manual if I want. It's just really great. It's the best way to track what's going on in crypto. And you get these great alerts letting you know when stuff's up or down by X percentages, set notifications, and everything else. It's really the missing element for tracking your portfolio. I've not gone back to other options since switching to Delta. Thanks so much for Delta being a partner of LedgerCast, and go to ledgerstatus.com/Delta. Tell them thanks for sponsoring the show because, you know, they help us put out great content and help us monetize that. And they make an outstanding product. I've really been trying to wait for the right partners, and they're an outstanding partner for us. They make fantastic software. There's no ICO, there's no nothing else. They just make a great product, and if you like it, you can use it for free, and you can buy an upsell to get even better features. That's what I like about it. Go to ledgerstatus.com/Delta. And hey, if you like this podcast, give us a rating on iTunes. We really appreciate that. I don't ask for that stuff much. And that's enough for me. Let's get straight to the show. Hello, and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard. I'm excited today. I have a special guest because we've talked about DEXs, decentralized exchanges, on this podcast quite a bit. And today we have the founder or co-founder of The Ocean, which is a ERC-20 trading platform built on top of the 0x protocol. We've talked about 0x and as kind of a central focus of our DEX discussions. So I'd like to welcome John Piotrowski. Did I pronounce that right, John?
You did. Very well done.
Awesome.
My first grade teacher always called me Peterson. She was too afraid to even make it. So I congratulate you.
Yeah, that's usually one of my checklist items to go over with a guest, and I forgot. So I was winging it. But John, so we were just discussing a little bit. You have a background as a trader. You were at Goldman. You've been in politics, and then you were at McKinsey. But you've done a lot of trading, both of traditional markets and in the crypto space. When did you actually get into trading in the crypto space?
Probably 2015 or so. I had a good buddy, Argentinian friend of mine, actually, who, for reasons you can probably guess, if he's from Argentina, got into Bitcoin relatively early and turned me on to the concept. And I'm somebody, too, who, you know, as you mentioned, has worked at Goldman Financial Services for a long time. So this concept of, you know, digital money is one that's very appealing to me.
Yeah. So, and your background at Goldman and traditional markets, were you on a trading desk there or?
I started out and I'm sort of managing risk for trading desks, particularly in what's called a FIC or fixed income currencies. And then eventually I led, you know, strategy and execution optimization and business development for much of Goldman Sachs. I was there for 5 years prior to this adventure.
Okay. So if you were getting involved in 2015, if you're actively trading anytime in 2015 into 2016, you've experienced at least parts of a bear market. And we're finding ourselves certainly, I don't know what the technical definition of a bear market is in crypto, because 20% is just like a week, which is how we, in traditional markets, if you have a 20% reversal, that's usually a signal of a bear market or price below the 200-day moving average. These aren't things, 20% moves in crypto are frequent, and price below the 200-day hasn't been very infrequent until recently. So whether people want to technically define a bear market or not, I'm pretty sure we're in one. But you're familiar with the doldrums of bear markets, I assume, as a trader, right?
Yeah, that's quite fair.
Before we even dig into everything else, does that impact the way y'all are approaching your project with the ocean?
Yes and no. I mean, I think it does in the sense of, you know, when the market is frothy and there's lots of interest in high returning products, that's good for any exchange business, right? I also tend to think that we are thinking about long-term success and vision and building sort of the infrastructure of this new financial ecosystem. And in some sense, then, you know, we're more focused on, you know, how do we build the right bridges between different pools of liquidity, different products. And that's fundamentally what we're about.
So do you have a terrible story about centralized exchanges that feeds into your motivation for building this project?
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, I'll give you kind of where my head's at coming out of this space. So yes, part of it is, you know, I'm a trader by trading. I've traded FX, commodities, equities, bonds, the gamut, structured products. You know, I recall starting out as a trader in this space and just trying to move money from exchange A to exchange B being extremely challenging. And the concept that, you know, speaking specifically about Coinbase, that you could buy Bitcoin and get it 7 days later from something that was supposed to be a decentralized protocol is sort of odd to think about. Mm-hmm. I also think about a lot in the sense of, you know, the capital markets or traditional financial flow sense of, you know, I'm somebody who started their career at the International Monetary Fund and, you know, started then went on in 2008, 2009, when there were a lot of issues, you know, in Greece and Hungary. Then I was at McKinsey, working on banks strategy in Europe. Then I was eventually at Goldman doing much of the same work. And the constant theme that keeps coming up in all those experiences, you know, number one, you know, this recognition in the space, general financial services, of, hey, why is it still expensive to move digital bits that represent value from point A to point B? Why does it take a long time? Why are there still inherently risks when we have email and we can communicate in so many other different ways? You know, nobody's trading paper stocks anymore. So why is that? It doesn't make any sense. And the industry at large actually recognizes that too. The question is, how do you build that better future? How do you create that infrastructure in which to do it? And, you know, to me, as somebody who's been in the space and seen, you know, from a financial services perspective, all the angles, the concept of decentralized exchange is extremely powerful from that perspective, if you build it the right way the right roadmap to adoption. And I think that's what we're doing.
Yeah. So there are several decentralized exchange projects out there, and those vary from underlying protocols to even the relayer ecosystem for 0x is getting fairly crowded, at least. You know, there's a lot of people with funding that are trying this stuff. So let's start just with when you decided to do this, why did you choose to build on top of the 0x protocol?
I think when we started to look and evaluate the space and how we wanted to play in it and build something, I think something you recognize quickly in building anything is it's a function of, you know, the team that you put together. Not just your team, but the team that you partner with externally. And what we really like about 0x, Will Warren and the rest of the team, is they're hyper-focused on doing one thing really, really, really well, which is just how do I build a smart contract system that puts funds, the way I describe it, is effectively in escrow and swap it from wallet A to wallet B. And that's, you know, that sort of, even in their mission statement that they put out recently, talking about just we're focused on shipping good product. Yeah. I love that. You know, I think that's the type of people we want to work with and the type of product that we want to build off. Then, to your point, it becomes a question of, okay, now I have this sort of escrow atomic swap-ish system. How do I match people up effectively to trade? And then how do I push trades once they're in that, you know, smart contract escrow form, let's call it, to the chain to settle? And to your point, there's lots of different approaches and philosophies on how to do that. And then how do I build a business around it? You know, the great thing about 0x is there's the ability to have lots of different models. We have a model. Others have a model. You know, obviously we're biased towards ours and we can talk about that, but I think it'll be interesting to see how the space evolves as a result of that.
Yeah, when you talk about business models, essentially an exchange is going to make money either through fees or maintaining a spread or both. I don't have a great read on any revenue generating sources beyond that, besides maybe token value generation. Can you dig in a little bit to the model? Because one of the things for me is without significant user adoption, it seems like these could be tough businesses to run. So I'd like to spend a minute on the business model. And what's yours and why'd you choose it?
Yeah. So we're a fee-based model. You know, as products flow through our system, we'll take a very small fraction of that to continue to maintain development. You know, I'm somebody who comes from that traditional financial system. And so there's nobody better, more knowledgeable about how, you know, financial system takes little dribs and drabs here and there. That's not something we want to do.
Yeah,
I think we're very conscious of, and part of the reason you built the DEX in the first place is you want to eliminate as much cost and risk and time as possible. You know, and so we, you know, our goal is to maximize the amount of volume that goes through our pipes of all different types, because it brings down fees for everybody, right? And so that means not just cryptocurrencies, but securities tokens. That means not just retail, but institutions. And it means becoming flexible in the way we do business as well. I've talked to a number of different institutions on the streets as an example to create, you know, something called either like a dark pool or what's called a restricted order book that trades in specific products that helps eliminate unnecessary costs and overhead financial infrastructure. I've talked to lots of different ICO companies because we're a regulated platform. We can talk about that. I can take ICOs or other fundraising vehicles to market, both a primary and secondary sense. And so I think there's lots of possibilities. Our goal is to give fast, safe, cheap execution in all types of different financial products.
Yeah, so you're digging into a couple of things that I think are going to differentiate you from what people may think about with a DEX. So historically, within the crypto space, you think DEX, you think, okay, well, this is going to be private. I'm not going to have KYC. I'm going to be able to do wallet-to-wallet matching. So somebody puts up an order they want to sell. I want to buy it. There it goes. It shows our two addresses. We keep those on device. nobody knows anything else. The exchange is hands off. That's why it's decentralized. It's based on privacy and anonymity. I signed up for your airdrop to just get at least some view of your user experience, and it had full KYC built into the airdrop. I imagine that y'all, it seems like y'all are going to have KYC built around the user system on the exchange. So, right. What is the, if you're doing a DEX and you have KYC, are those, it doesn't seem like to you at least those things are at conflict. So why are you making those choices?
Yeah, I mean, I think it starts with, you know, just what's your framework on regulation in this space in general?
Yeah.
You know, I'm somebody who kind of goes back to, if you think about the SEC's mandate for a second, which is, you know, protect investors, fair and efficient markets, solid capital formation. I don't think those are things people fundamentally disagree with.
Right.
Right. And then the question becomes, how do you implement something that actually does that? You can argue in a lot of ways the traditional financial system doesn't do that.
Right.
You know, something like KYC and AML, we think is good on the net because it makes sure that you know, malicious actors and agents, not just from where you reside or what type of activity you might want to do, but even just the concept of enforcing user accounts at a base level. If there are, you know, bad actors or agents on our platform, they're continuously spoofing the order book and making it more expensive for people to trade, I can penalize them. And the fact that we do KYC, AML, and follow some, not all of the you know, regulatory regimes of the old world, it has a lot of hidden benefits, I would call, too. You know, one is, you know, we'll be able to offer fiat to crypto, and other DEX can do that. We'll have liquidity, actually, as opposed to other DEXs. The biggest reason being that big institutions, biggest crypto liquidity providers in the world, cannot work on platforms that don't KYC AML for their own compliance reasons.
Yeah.
Partly because they're managing money on behalf of other people. And so, you know, we're very conscious of, and we think, early regulatory adoption, and not just, you know, adoption for adoption's sake, but working actively with regulators to devise what type of regime we should want in this space is the right approach. And I think, you know, because we're doing that as a DEX, where our pitch to regulators is, hey, you know, we're not just a centralized exchange selling Bitcoin, but I'm a non-custodial, no counterparty risk execution system that I can put tokenized, you know, not just cryptocurrencies, utilities tokens, but traditional assets on that platform. Well, that's pretty interesting to not just institutions and individual customers, but regulators too. I think we satisfy a lot of incentives that are actually aligned. And I think because of that, we'll have a lot more options than and a better experience actually for individuals than I think people would otherwise think.
Yeah. Historically, I can't even really think of a lot of exchanges, centralized exchanges that haven't at least gotten their act together in terms of doing KYC based out of the US. So there are some exchanges, like you can go on Binance or Cryptopia and you can get away with without having that stuff. Mm-hmm. Even if you get into the margin side of things like BitMEX, I don't think you have to KYC yet as an individual investor. Really, none of them are trying to address the US market, or they're actively avoiding it. Mm-hmm. And is the U.S. regulatory stance a big part of why U.S.-based companies are being pretty aggressive in terms of verifying user identities?
Yes, I think so. And you know, part of it is, you know, our rationale and part for, you know, early adoption is the concept of bridges. You know, I think there's always going to be a need. I think we can see the point that just like there's Swiss bank accounts today, there's always going to be people who want to be completely anonymous. I don't think that's the majority of people. It's certainly not the institutional case where I want some sort of comfort that the people I'm trading with and more importantly, the marketplace in which I'm transacting treats me fairly. You know, and I want some sort of sense of, you know, responsibility that, exchanges have taken upon themselves to self-police and to work actively with regulators to do that. Like there's more to, KYC AML, is really a custody concept where, people, sort of a banking context, I take deposits from lots of different people, send it out to lots of different people. What happens with that money, in a DEX context? And we're actively working with regulators to define something that makes sense for us, from because we don't take custody of assets ever. The sort of that custody or chain of custody issues don't apply to us. But I still want to run an efficient marketplace. I still want to make sure that the prices that we show are the most efficient, fair prices that you pay. That's a regulatory concept. There's certain protections that we have to put in our execution system to make that a reality.
That's certainly counter to what the crypto ecosystem ethos was several years ago and what brought a lot of people to the ecosystem. I'm sure people you've met, like being a trader in 2015, 2016, before the big retail shift, I think newer users are probably more accustomed to this idea of forking over your identity. But even, Poloniex, not until they got acquired by Circle did they say, all right, you got to do this,
Definitely.
I think
it's interesting. Like I went to, Consensus this year, at least met lots of folks in New York, which was a crazy event. Lots of people from all around the world, lots of different viewpoints. But the thing I found, interesting was I think people have kind of realized that there is a, I might term it an upper bound on pure non-regulatory compliance, that there's actually benefits to some compliance framework. And, again, that doesn't mean we have to just cut and paste what happened in the old world into the new world. I think there is a recognition that if you want maximum adoption by maximum people around the world, things like, some sort of identity verification, some sort of custody, some sort of no risk execution is really important. And the answers, the long-term answers aren't solved yet. We're going to be active in that conversation. We spend a tremendous amount of time with regulators, talking to regulators, talking to institutions, talking to individuals, talking to token companies about this stuff. And the thing I've noticed is just the wind has shifted a little bit to, okay, rather than being pure Wild West, how do we think about growing in a safe and responsible way? And we want to be a company that takes the onus a little bit on us to do that, to self-police and make sure that individuals and companies and regulators we work with think of us as a trustworthy partner.
Let's dig into what matters most from that. So all these things, at the end of the day, you're looking to create a great product that meets the regulatory requirements, but it's got to be a great place to trade if you're going to get users. And for you to be a successful company, you need users that are coming and filling your order books and executing trades. The biggest killer for successful DEX experiences thus far has been a lack of liquidity. If you look on the entire 0x protocol now, it's a paltry number of transactions per day, which I think encompasses essentially the relayers and the trades that are happening there.
That's right.
How in the heck are you going to get liquidity on this platform to get people excited to trade on it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it all starts with vision and understanding of what, to your point, customers want, right? Like to me and to us, the concept here of DEX is almost the last thing individuals should care about in a lot of ways. I want, as me as somebody who's been a trader in the past, right? I want liquidity, fiat to crypto, good products, good user experience, good customer service and support, easy to use APIs. And I want also, the company to think about, it's hard to adopt products that don't look and feel like, especially from a financial service perspective, things that I'm familiar with. And so we have made all of our decisions through that prism and through that lens, just the fact that we run an order book, an off-chain order book. That's what people want. People want off-chain order books. It's what they know. Maybe 20 years.
Off-chain order books versus on-chain order books. Quickly, on-chain order books means you got to pay gas and stuff for every action. Every time you set an order, change an order, execute the order. Everything requires gas. Everything has to go through the blockchain, and it's a big, slow disaster. So
exactly. It's not scalable. It's not user-friendly. It's expensive, right? And even you think about other models, too, that are more pure peer-to-peer and aren't order books at all. Like the philosophical problem I have with those platforms is they're also not scalable. They're not intrinsically fair either. If you and
it's like an air swap is an example where you just go on and you say, I want to buy ZRX, and you can buy ZRX.
That's
right. It's not actually an order book. There's just a back-end order matching system with a market maker, right?
That's right. And
why is that unfair?
Well, you and I could be on the platform at the same time and get matched up with two different market makers who offer fundamentally different prices, right? And so, you know, and you think about as well from a scalability perspective, you know, lots of little individual peer-to-peer trades to us are good mechanisms yet for how to move real volume. And real volume helps with liquidity. Real volume matches, it drives prices down, reduces frictions.
To their point, though, I just want to give a quick counter just to get your feedback on this. I know Bancor. I haven't done this with AirSwap, but I've had friends that have gone on Bancor, which is very similar. You go on and you say, I want to buy, you know, some token. We'll just stick with ZRX. And whether it's $100 worth, $1,000 worth, or like $500,000 worth, you can basically go and you're going to have somebody match that order for you. And Bancor, I know they like super pride themselves on instant low slippage liquidity. And obviously they're making their money on the spread there because they've got, you know, bots or something running in the background make sure that they can execute that order to get that price to where they're not losing money on it. So there's got to be some spread issue there. But I can't go on any other DEX right now and sell, you know, $500,000 worth of a token without massive slippage, or like that's probably more volume than the whole DEX has. So they do have an advantage on some stuff like that. Or is there something I'm missing? Like, can you provide, is there the ability to provide liquidity in that way on other platforms or on a
traditional? Yeah, I mean, there's no reason that you can't pump liquidity through other DEX structures. The reason that doesn't happen today is they haven't done a good job of doing it, right? And I think, you know, for us, you know, part of our strategy is making sure that we give particularly big liquidity providers and big partners exactly what they want in terms of easy-to-use experience. Like, I don't disagree with the view that there's value in sort of dark pools or peer-to-peer. You know, okay. For me, as somebody who you know, might want to buy 5 tokens to do X thing, a peer-to-peer system might not be a bad option for me, to be completely honest with you. Is that how most financial value in the world moves today? No. There's a reason that order books exist, because if you're trying to move tremendous volume at scale with lots of different parties around the world, proven to be the most efficient mechanism if you build it well. If you build it in such a way with order book protections and good execution. You know, I think I always come back to you know, this concept of bridge of, you know, if we want to build a better future, that doesn't mean you build some, you know, a steady state product that might look the world wants to be in 100 years. It's you have to grow into something like that. And we'll see how our own product evolves. I think right now, for where the market is, for what people want, order books are the way to go. And there are things we can do, particularly because we're an off-chain order book, around dark pools, primary market issuance, lots of different ways we can go. We think we have maximum flexibility, as opposed to putting a stake in the ground of, this is the right way to do it. Let's do it this way. We want to respond to customers. And right now, order books to us are the only way that makes sense.
So let's use a couple of examples. If I go on GDAX right now and try to trade Litecoin, like their volume is way down because it's not new money trading Litecoin today when Litecoin's down whatever 70% off the highs. So if you look at a Litecoin chart, it looks like a hot mess on low time frames, because even Litecoin, a top cryptocurrency on a top exchange, which he asks, the liquidity is not great. That said, you can still go and sell a bunch of Litecoin and the system will absorb it.
Sure.
In contrast to that, if I go to somewhere like, say, Radar Relay, which is one of your competitors, and I, you know, try to get on those books, like there might be a trade every 20 minutes. Or even if I go, and that's not to hate on Radar Relay. I think what they're building is very interesting. It's just what we're seeing with DEXs. IDEX right now, another example, they're not a 0x relayer. They're on their own platform. They have basically taken over DEX market share so far. Even still, if I go try to hit a non-top five token with a significant order, it better be a limit order because it's going to be major slippage on that platform. So what is the answer in these situations? Because that's a little challenging. Like it's got to be, I guess the way I'm trying to phrase this, it's got to be daunting to someone that's trying to build something, and you look at the stuff that's out there right now and you're like, ugh.
Yeah, I mean, I think it all comes down to, you know, how you manage your sometimes hate using this term, but I'll use it, you know, your go-to-market strategy, where lots of people, I think particularly in the DEX space, have gone out and said, hey, we're a DEX, we're decentralized, we don't take custody, come, you know, build it and they will come sort of mentality. That just doesn't fundamentally work if you're launching any financial services product, particularly if you want to track and manage liquidity. I think the way we are thinking about it is build it and find the right partners and companies to work with.
You're bringing on a liquidity provider for every pair that you're putting on the
platform. That's right. You know, so, you know, our strategy is, you know, we're doing this right now, integrating with a number of dedicated market makers who, again, the reason they are not using any other DEX is because no other DEX does KYC AML. No other DEX has a compliance policy that fits any sort of, let's call it, old world financial schema. And at the end of the day, right, you want adoption in the space, you want liquidity in the space, you have to get those people on your platform, right? There is appetite for institutions, institutional investors, crypto funds, obviously, to execute big volumes that if you're the average trader, then that's good for you, right? There is an upper bound to how much interest there is. And so you have to put on other products that those institutions are also care about. We can talk about that. But unless you build an inviting and enticing atmosphere and roadmap for those partners, you're not going to have liquidity. You know, and so we think about a little bit the reverse is build the right platform that gets institutions and big liquidity providers excited. And then let's make sure that we build a really good, enticing retail experience. Most other DEXs do it in reverse. And the regulatory piece is a key part of our strategy. The order book piece is a key part of our strategy. And the types of products we want to list in the steady state is a key part of our strategy.
So if you're bringing on a market maker per listing pair, then one, they have to be incentivized to be a market maker. So they have to, if they're going to run on your, I'm assuming these are mostly API driven, y'all have pretty significant documentation on using your API. So I imagine these people are spending money to create market maker algorithms to provide liquidity on your platform, and they're looking to make something off of that. So where do they make their money, and how does this affect what you're going to list? Because a lot of DEXs, people just want to be able to say, well, I want to determine as a user what this platform's going to have. Like if I've got, you know, 500 ocean tokens, I want to pop them on there, and if they don't have an ocean pairing, then now they do, because me as a DEX user decided to try to trade these there.
Yeah, I mean, I think to that latter point, you know, we want to execute all types of different products, good products and good products. Like I think
So basically, that means not every product.
Right.
So basically,
right. I mean, I think, you know, there's you know, obviously a tension in the space. Putting aside the securities versus Delato debate, right? There are certain projects that exist out there that might list Jake Gyllenhaal as an advisor on their website as one example, right? Is that something that some people will be interested in trading? Yes. Is that something that we necessarily want to list? Probably not. You know, it goes back to that philosophy of good capital markets, good marketplace, treating investors fairly.
So you're essentially trying to ensure as a company that you're listing things that are real, have some either market history or some weight behind them as a project. So essentially, you're self-regulating the market, the go-to-market process for a token.
And obviously, for me as a company, I have to listen to what customers want, right? Within,
yeah,
you know, and so that doesn't mean that we're not going to be cognizant of what people want to trade. But as an example, I'm going to prioritize derivatives, margin trading, and good products as opposed to just listing everything under the sun, because number one, I think particularly from a DEX context, and there's some interesting things we can do that gives people things that they want if you're an individual trader. And for institutions, it's a requirement. You know, I think in general, you know, the more adoption that there is of this general blockchain cryptocurrency space by people not currently in the space is a net good thing for everybody, no matter what angle you come at the space from. As part of that is giving, you know, those folks, you know, the institutions and non-crypto traders today, the tools and the products they want, right? And so part of the reason we're becoming or in the process of completing regulatory filings with the SEC and the CFTC is we can do derivatives. I can do true securities in token form. You know, people argue a lot about the value of cryptocurrencies today. Nobody argues about the value of Apple stock as much.
Right. So you filed to be a broker dealer so that you can trade anything.
Yeah, we're in that process, right? And so we're working with regulators to make sure that cadence and that timeline makes sense, that our listing process makes sense, the list goods products. But in the steady state, we'll be able to do whatever we want with whomever we want. And we think that's, you know, does that mean that we will list every product that IDEX has? No, we won't. You know, I think there'll be multiple venues that different folks will want to trade on. But I think, particularly if you're thinking about, you know, liquidity and how this space, not just the DEX space, but the blockchain space blows up and takes over the financial world, these types of bridges, and I, you know, I'm harping on this world, but I think it's an important concept. Like, if you don't build something that's recognizable to people and plays by some of the old rules that engages in some of those conversations, you're capping your upside. And then that's, you know, from both a technical perspective and a regulatory perspective.
How close are we to being able to say, okay, I'm going on the Ocean's platform and I want to buy Apple stock? How, like, at what stage does that happen? Because I don't know anywhere where traditional assets are mirrored on a blockchain. Is that something that's coming soon?
I think it's coming faster than people think. Do I think it's a tomorrow or this summer thing? No. Can I say that we're working actively with a number of institutions to make that a reality? Yes.
I want to take a quick break to thank Delta for partnering with LedgerCast for this episode and more. You'll be hearing about them for months to come. Hey, you know, they just had a major release. It includes extra portfolio timeframes. So instead of daily and all time, you can also do weekly and hourly for you real addicts that need to know the percentage changes of your portfolio every hour by the hour. You can do that now. Also, you can have a multi-portfolio balance. So if you keep your portfolio segmented by you know, industry or something, you can add all those together to get the total balance of your portfolio. I mentioned in the intro about the exclusive night mode where it's all black. If you really want the darker theme that's just for pro people, And then one that I'm super pumped about is passcodes and touch or face ID support. So if you have touch ID or face ID on your phone or a passcode, you can use that to protect your portfolio from prying eyes. And that's just a really great addition. Thanks so much to Delta for partnering with us on LedgerCast. Go to ledgerstatus.com/Delta to learn more about them, download it, and all that good stuff. It's a fantastic product, and I know you'll like it. And if I do that, that means I literally own Apple stock, right?
Correct. And so again, you know, this idea of bridges, right? So in that, how do I, you know, make sure the custody of that old world asset listed against a token is real, right? Sort of like that.
And in doing so, I'm able to buy Apple stock with Ethereum.
Yeah, in that perfect future world, yes. You know, one of the projects that I'm now an advisor to is Trust Token, based in San Francisco, who's looking exactly at this problem. And again, it's not a problem that's going to be solved tomorrow, but I think there's tremendous value in having all types of financial products and flow in a single place, in a single infrastructure. That's the dream, right? Like, no matter whether you're a Bitcoin bull or I just care about securities or derivatives, I think everybody can agree, whether it's you and me, regulators, institutions, that having that place in one, all that stuff in one place, in one infrastructure, is a net good thing. It takes time. It's not going to happen tomorrow. But I think if you don't start with that vision or that premise, you start making decisions that limit your ability to get there, like not being regulated, like building a different system than an order book, which is what most people know today. I think that roadmap to adoption is really important. It's something we think a lot about and worth trying to find. And we're already working with a number of different partners, the blockchain, the traditional financial services space, to accelerate that reality.
You mentioned something a minute ago that perked my ears in a big way, which was margin trading.
Yep.
So are you saying that DEX-based margin trading, either via swap contracts or futures or options or all three, is that a future both for DEXs and for your platform?
I think yes to both. Again, it gives giving the people what they want, right? That's our focus. And an interesting thing about DEXs, again, it's for the general financial services concept, is, you know, we de-risk the financial system if you build it the right way. Right. So I go back to, if everything in the world ran on decentralized exchanges, there would have been no Lehman Brothers. There would have been no financial crisis in a lot of ways, right? Because what spreads financial risk is big pools of central risks, Lehman Brothers, my old shop, Goldman Sachs, that hold lots of assets for lots of different people on any one given day. Goldman, as an example, I'm not trying to pick at them, at the just what I know best, you know, holds 3 million different risk positions on any one day. You know, so something goes bad in one part of the bank, you know, in that game of hot potato that the system plays every day, and I drop all the potatoes, that's a really bad thing. And a DEX can eliminate that. It can also eliminate it in a derivative sense too. It's going to take some time to develop what the right infrastructure for that is. We're actively working on it.
Meaning like flash crash failures.
Yeah, exactly. Or even just something more simple of, you know, in a truly decent, you know, derivatives, margin trading sort of works because I have, you know, somebody wants to go long, somebody wants to go short. There's some netting that goes on there. And so there's some efficiency I get there. If you do that in a purely decentralized context, that's harder to pull off. And so again, you have to kind of think of what's the medium state, I think. And we're thinking about what that medium state is.
How will that even work? Because if I go on a centralized exchange, like Kraken, I think is basically the only American exchange where you can do this. So you can go on Kraken, you can deposit one Bitcoin, and then you can borrow more than one Bitcoin, but you're using that Bitcoin as collateral, and you can go 3, 4, 5x, whatever.
Yep.
And there's a whole system, but it relies on the fact that they have custody of your one Bitcoin.
Right.
So if you don't have custody of my funds, then how do you manage margin-based trading?
I mean, we'll have to see. Like, I don't think we have all the answers to those questions. I think part of it is, you know, this concept of, you know, how do you match, just like an order book sense, I'm matching up buyers and sellers. I'm matching up different views of the marketplace. We'll all have net, you know, holders in some sense. I'll have people that want to trade margin against it and so and borrow it. So if I provide some sort of framework in which to do that, some interest rate and compensation for the person who's lending, and I do it in a trustless way, that's pretty powerful. Then, you know, the person who's holding the assets gets a little bit of extra funds, and the person who's trading in that framework gets to execute the strategy that they want. It's up to us to devise that right smart contract system. We're evaluating options, and we want to do it again in a less risky, cheaper, compliant fashion. You know, I think the thing I find really interesting about this space from a regulatory perspective is that the incentive of regulators is actually the same incentive as all of us. Nobody, even banks, even people that work in banks, don't necessarily like the bank setup as it exists today. That was the whole reason I was hired at Goldman was, hey, how do we, trying to avoid using a curse word, but how do we fix, you know, this system that we built on 40 years of accumulated technology and flow? And those are regulators too. Like right now, the regulatory response to the financial crisis is insurance. If I'm a big institution, I hold lots of money in reserve, so if something happens, I can pay out. Much better.
It's regulated in a sense to where you're obligated to hold a certain amount of money to protect the system in case of a black swan event.
Exactly. And guess what happens to that cost? Those people gets passed on to you and me in one way or the other.
Right.
So if you can remove a lot of that requirement instead of ensuring, let's just create a trustless smart contract blockchain-based system that doesn't. And at the end of the day, that's what institutions are after. It's what regulators are after. And so, you know, there's lots of buzz about, you know, institutional Bitcoin adoption. You know, I think people forget institutions are at the behest of their customers. Only if customers are interested in Bitcoin will I offer it. Some customers are, many are not at the moment. Doesn't mean they won't be. Every single institution, every regulator, every individual, I think, wants safer, faster, cheaper financial markets, flows, blockchain and tokenized stuff, or cryptographically wrapped stuff, whether it's native like Bitcoin or Ethereum, or it's a transition from an old world we think is powerful. And we want to build a roadmap to that world. And, you know, that's really what our kind of vision is as a company.
There's a ton of buzz right now around custody and creating custody solutions for these institutions that we're talking about, because typically there's not someone, let's just say Goldman is an institution that's looking to use your platform in addition to others from their new cryptocurrency desk, okay? So they're going to trade on the ocean. They're not going to have some trader with a Trezor or a Ledger and connect it to their at work computer and execute trades, and they've got $100 million worth of crypto sitting on that Trezor. So how is custody going to be a part of your workflow for trying to lure these institutions to trade with you?
It's a critical piece. It's why we're talking with a number of, you know, announced and yet to be announced custodian projects in this space to think about, well, let's design that right flow with institutions today. You know, I think it's a mistake, you know, again, this sort of idea of build it and they will come, that just doesn't work in financial services because there's too much at risk, right? Like you could do that in sort of a, you know, again, I'm not trying to pick on industries, but in a social media context, like the risks are lower to move fast and break things.
Yeah.
Financial services.
At the worst, you're going to give up someone's data, and, you know, everybody's data has been leached and breached and everything else.
Yeah. At this point, I'm sure my face is all over the world in some way, shape, or form. Not like, I want it that way, but
it's tough. It's tough to screw up more than someone else has already screwed up when it comes to social data.
You know, so this concept of custody is extremely important. We want to build solutions that, again, bridge to between old world and new world. And so that's why we're working with a number of different companies in the space that, okay, we have no counterparty risk execution. That's great. Until we plug into some really good custodian projects and design the right flow, the right signatures, the right safeguards, it's not going to be maximally impactful and successful. I kind of think of it too in the CoinRail hack, I think not last weekend, but 2 weekends ago was interesting in South Korea. Like you had, you know, the token company sort of, you know, help CoinRail limit damage from that concept. I was also thinking of, you know, for a long time, we're going to exist in a world where lots of people want to be their own bank, want to manage their own private keys. Lots of people don't do want some extra safeguards. That's not a bad thing if people want to do that. I think we have to design and think about usability from that context. I was at the MIT Bitcoin conference earlier this year, and that came up quite a bit. Jameson Lopp spoke a lot about this. Great beard, by the way, but besides that, really smart guy. And you know, he was really interesting and fascinating to talk to, think about wallets and usability and you know, the reason partly KYC AML exists in banking context is to correct for errors that are bound to happen. Someone is going to lose their private key at some point. Should they lose all the money they've ever saved because of that? I don't think that's, again, a good outcome. We need to find what that solution is. And I think, you know, those custodian debates, if you look at it through that prism, not just how do I get institutions onboarded, but how do I make sure that the space is maximally usable for the most number of people and the most number of contexts. I think that's a really powerful lens to look through.
And for a little bit of context for people, Jameson is actually, he's launched a thing called Casa. There's an interview that I can link up on what Bitcoin did, where he talked more about that. And they're doing custody, but for high net worth individuals with multi-sig as kind of a basis for that. But yeah, this whole custody thing is very daunting to think about how it's going to be managed. Even somebody, you know, like me, a retail trader, you know, I'm not like a crypto millionaire or anything. I'm just a guy that I have a job and I have extra money that I put into crypto. And therefore, it's no different than, you know, if I'm managing a 401k or a Roth, except for the fact that it's like all on these little keys and devices and exchanges, and it's like this big hot mess. So there's so much daunting stuff. And whether you're someone like me or you're on a big trading desk at a bank looking to trade crypto, y'all have to start somewhere. You're launching soon. I want to get into the dynamics of your platform. What the heck is version one going to look like? I mean, we've covered the gamut. Like, we've covered the dream world of trading on a decentralized exchange. So what is it going to be out of the gate?
Well, I think out of the gate, you know, it's a retail-focused platform. It's about, you know, making sure that we build something that is on par in many ways with the centralized trading experience. It goes back to unless we have liquidity, unless we offer fiat to crypto, good customer service, the wallet integration, early custody integration, who cares in a lot of ways. So, you know, for us, we think of starting small and building, you know, very rapidly over the next few months to, you know, more and more of that ideal future. And I think part of it just will, you know, starts with executing the basics of. Liquidity is the number one thing we think about. It's the number one focus for us.
And that's really, honestly, as a trader, it's great to hear, because it's what keeps me off of most DEXs. The first one, well, a Bancor or a AirSwap has been fine, because like what we talked about earlier, but a DEX with a traditional order book, until IDEX really got hot recently. And, you know, IDEX has a head start on everybody right now, because somehow they hit a nerve and they've got, I don't know, something like 80% of all DEX order flow. And they've got 5 or 10% of all Ethereum transactions on their platform. And that's the first time it takes that amount. Like, that's dominance in the DEX marketplace right now.
Yep.
And that's what it takes for me to trade a portion of their assets. And I'm a retail trader. So you have a challenge, but right now you've essentially built, and this is how I met y'all, was me being rude, thinking that you were doing some tease about GDAX. Because your platform looks a lot like GDAX, at least in the screenshot that I saw. But I assume that's because you're essentially trying to create something that's familiar, except with these DEX components of trading wallet to wallet.
Exactly. Like in some contexts, like you shouldn't, the fact that we're a DEX should be almost the last thing you think about in some ways, right? When you're evaluating a trading platform, I think it's an important thing to think about. Obviously, we would be building it. Because I think it solves a critical need in the space of, you know, how do we have essentially a blank sheet of paper to build a new financial system. Let's not repeat the same mistakes that we made in the Lehman Brothers context. If we have the technology and the ability to do it in a trustless, you know, counterparty risk system, let's do it. But, you know, our mentality is you have to be on par in all other parts of the experience. And liquidity is a big piece, and the types of products that we list is a big piece too. An interesting thing that's happening is we have lots of liquidity providers, we have lots of token companies, other partners in the space that are coming to us now. And we're still, you know, we're launching early July, probably second week of July. You know, again, we want to make sure liquidity is there. So that'll be, you know, we're working with our market making partners and liquidity providers to do that. But why are lots of projects coming to us? I think it comes down to, you know, vision team mentality in a lot of ways. You know, like our vision is this, you know, fixing what's broken in digital asset markets, whether it's crypto markets or traditional system. It's doing it in a regulated fashion that draws more people and more types of products into the space. And it's doing it with a team that knows what they're doing, not just in financial services. You know, we have guests, but now I'm a financial services person at heart. You know, the rest of our team,
15 people on your team that all seem to have some sort of background, whether it's in product design, but some in financial services as well, at least based on looking through it.
Yep, financial services, product design, mobile games, B2B, B2C software, startups, international experience. And I think our team as well has the mentality that as a trading platform in a place where, you know, people come and trade things, we're only as good as the things that we list and the services that we provide. And so if we're not good people to work with good vision, treat people fairly, have a roadmap to long-term success for everyone that participates in our ecosystem, that's a bad thing for us.
On week number one, how many assets will I be able to trade that I assume that you're providing suitable liquidity so that if I've got, I don't know, let's say $10,000 worth that I want to go buy or sell, that'll be something I can do. Because that alone, I'll just throw it out there. If someone can go and buy or sell $10,000 worth of a crypto asset on a DEX, that's impressive all by itself.
Yeah. So I mean, I think that's, you know, that's what we're focused on. And so, you know, on the very first day, we're going to err on fewer, more liquid books, not more thin books.
Okay.
Right. We want to do a mix of assets that you know, are ones that are sort of your, call it greatest hits, some up and comers, some new projects and products. And even in that context, it's not all going to be literally the first day. It's going to be over the course of the summer.
Yeah.
I think we're very conscious of, to your point, the number one sales pitch we can have is I can show up and the shelves are stocked. Right. And I think that's a very different mentality than most DEXs have had, most of which have been around for 6 months. And I think will surprise people how quickly we're able to tap into a real liquid market. And a lot of it goes back to the regulatory stuff. If you do not KYC AML, you will not get big liquidity providers in space, period. I've talked to all of them. I've known a lot of them for years. I've trained some of them to be traders and market makers in general financial services contexts. I think that's one of our advantages that we have.
Are y'all going to be market makers on your own platform, or is it all third party?
We want to be all third party. You know, again, you know, I think there are ways.
I'm pro that it separates incentive structures.
You know, I think in a world in which, let's say, we're launching new projects or helping launch new projects in a primary market, maybe that's something that we do. But again, we would do that in a regulatory, you know, compliant fashion, which there are tremendous rules around that stuff and rules that I'm very familiar with. At Goldman, I was one of the main people that interacted with regulators on a daily basis. And there's reasons that those rules are in place. So we're very conscious of, you know, for us to have any chance in institutional type of business, we can't make any mistakes in a regulatory sense. Why we're so working so closely with them. That's why, you know, it's one thing for me to say it. It's another for regulators to say it, and for you as a user to see it on our platform. You know, we want to abide by those rules because we think it's better products, more fair pricing, more liquid markets for everybody.
Do y'all need a BIT license or anything? If you're based in New York, is the entity based out of New York?
I don't want to get too much into, you know, the entity is a US-based entity, and we're working with our legal team and regulators right now on what's the best structure. You know, because we're a DEX, there's a strong argument that many traditional regulations, BIT license included, don't technically apply because we never take custody.
Okay.
Most financial regulations view things through the prism of custody, making sure that if you as a third party take access, take money, you don't do something bad with it. Obviously, we don't do that. That being said, there are some provisions in the BIT license or any other regulation that we think are good ones. Like doing KYC AML and registering a FinCEN, we think is a net good thing, irrespective of what any one regulation might say. So we're in the process of applying for many different things, talking with regulators, and we'll see, you know, over the course of the summer where we shake out on what things are or not applicable.
When you say you never take custody, so, and I apologize for referencing IDEX, but that's where people are trading. Right now, if I go on IDEX, I put one Ethereum on IDEX, then I actually deposit it to IDEX. So they do kind of take custody, or I'm pretty sure it's custody. And that's what allows me to set like limit orders and things like that, which are tough for a DEX. Are y'all going to be able to have things like limit orders without ever having?
Yeah. I mean, we, you know, I'm not an expert on the IDEX infrastructure. I've played with it a lot.
Yeah.
My understanding is they run sort of almost a parallel chain in which they do a pseudo custody, sort of a hybrid between a state.
Yeah. That's why I don't want to call it custody per se, but somehow you're giving them the ability to execute an order without you signing it at that exact moment.
Yeah. I mean, so we've implemented solutions to this. You'll certainly be able to place limit orders. You'll also be able to do, we're the only place, only DEX in which you can place a true market order. We've developed something called a reserve system, and all credit goes to our CTO, Ari, on developing this system that, you know, a lot of DEXs don't have market order system. If you want to buy 100 units, there's 5 orders of 20 on the book. Either I need to grab all of them individually, I get some sort of price fudgery that goes on certain platforms. We have a different system in which, you know, one of the canonical things for any exchange is, you know, price, time, priority, and what I see is what I get. Right, like I'm not surprised with what the final price ends up being. And so we've implemented a market order system. We'll be publishing some details on that system either later this week or probably next week on our blog, which we'll highlight. But I think we're very conscious of making sure we build the experience to best replicate what people expect, right, to your point. And we've spent a lot of time, you know, we're launching a little bit later than other DEX projects, partly because we're learning from the mistakes that others have made, partly because of regulatory reasons, partly because we wanted to build a better product. And I think, you know, that market order system is one of those examples that I think will surprise people if you put in the time, energy, and effort to do it, you can build a really maximally scalable, easy-to-use system in a decentralized framework.
And to your point, if you're launching with the shelves stocked, thus far, I mean, a DEX could be launched, but if I'm going into the grocery store and they tell me, well, we're waiting on our suppliers to bring the groceries, I can't really do a lot of shopping.
I'm going back to that grocery store, you know? And so like that's the most important thing we can do. It's a thing we think about a lot. It's something that we want to grow in a very sequenced and orderly fashion. I'd rather we have one super liquid book than 100 empty books. You know, obviously we're going to be somewhere in the middle. We're going to grow over the course of the summer. But that's the way we think about it.
Are you going to quickly have access to non-ERC-20 tokens and create mirrors for them? So like a Dogecoin, but 20 version?
We've talked a lot about this. You know, quickly is a matter of priority and fate. I think it's something that, you know, as we grow liquidity in pairs over the summer, one of our, you know, technical priorities beyond a better fiat to crypto on-ramp or smoother one, let's say, you know, for that process, we're partnering with some folks that will be announced later this week. Yes, how do you, right now we're Ethereum-based. How do you think about decentralized execution cross chains or with mirrors, or we're exploring some different technical options. It's a big priority this summer. That being said, there's a lot you can do just on a chain as well. Doesn't necessarily have to be Ethereum. You know, there's the ability for us to jump to, you know, potentially another chain should that chain take off. Right now, Ethereum obviously makes sense given especially all the securities projects that are being developed that lots of people want and want access to, whether it's gold or real estate or whatever. There's a lot you can do single chain, but I think we've built our technology stack to be maximally flexible. We want to leverage that flexibility.
So you could change your underlying infrastructure, but because your partners are integrating with your API, you're able to allow them to keep using your API, but you change everything underneath, and that allows you flexibility in case Ethereum falls apart and EOS becomes the new way to do everything or whatever. Have y'all considered what kind of cross-chain stuff have y'all looked at? I've got Wan pulled up on my computer right now, like Wanchain. I think that's what they're promising. And then there's, I think, several things in this realm.
Yeah, we're evaluating options. I mean, we started to dig into, I think it's the Republic protocol about, you know, Bitcoin to Ethereum, sort of dark pool swaps. You know, that's a project we're interested in exploring more. As far as I know, there's no sort of canonical solution to this problem. We'll have to see how much, you know, open source we leverage, we build our own. We'll have to see. But we're, you know, again, goes back to, unless we put Bitcoin on our platform, we're not maximally valuable. And so we need to figure out a way in which to do that. And we want to do it in a riskless fashion, you know, because of
I would say that's the other thing about DEXs that drives me crazy is, you know, to be honest, I prefer to trade on a Bitcoin pair. And all these ERC-20 exchanges are pricing in Ethereum, and I've gotten used to it, but it doesn't mean it's my preference, because there are times where I don't want to own Ethereum, you know, like as a trader, when Ethereum is $1,000 and going up, that's great. But when Ethereum is, you know, dropping like a rock, I don't exactly want that to be my base pair for some token that I'm trading. So,
yeah, I mean, I think we're, you know, part of the way I think about it is, you know, for us, we need to, you know, there's lots of companies and projects, not just in this space, but in any space that sort of launch and say, hey, we'll wait for things to happen to us. We're going to make things happen for ourselves. We're going to find the right partners. We're going to build the right infrastructure. We're going to hire the right people to get it done. That's our sole focus is, at the end of the day, as a retail-facing product and a customer-facing product, I got to make the customer happy. That's what I want to do. It's a little bit different problem than the 0x problem. The 0x problem is, let me build, you know, a infrastructure piece that other infrastructure people can build on top of it. They do a fantastic job doing it. Super excited to work with them. I think their team is fantastic. We have a different problem of, I need to be responsive to for the end customer needs. And all the things that we've been talking about are exactly that. So if I don't solve those problems, I'm not hyper-focused on those solutions, we're not going to be successful in the long term.
So let's dig into how, and we're going to wrap this up shortly. We're over time, but I've asked a lot of the types of questions I've wanted to, frankly, ask someone running a DEX. So I appreciate you being upfront with me about that. But let's wrap it up with, where are you getting money right now? And then we'll finish with the token. But
yep.
I assume you have private funding. Did y'all do an ICO, or do you have one coming? Or
we're not doing an ICO.
Probably good.
we think so. ICO mechanism is really interesting. Funding mechanism, it's not right for us, partly because of regulatory reasons, partly because we value some of our VC and private backing from a strategic perspective. We'll be announcing those investors publicly in the next 2 weeks or so.
I can't find you on Crunchbase or anything right now.
Yeah. So we'll be announcing that. We have a good diverse team of, kind of San Francisco folks, crypto folks, fintech, and strategic partners that we're excited about. To your point, yes, we introduced our tradable discount token, the Ocean token, this past Thursday. Part of the reason, or the reason for introducing that, is it's not a funding mechanism. It's early adopters. We want to give maximum incentive to try us. And so if that means introducing a discount, that giving it away to people for free, that so long as you hold it, you don't have to spend it, you just hold it, you pay permanently lower fees on our already competitive prices, including gas. We'll cover a large portion of your gas as well. That's a mechanism that we think draws people into our ecosystem, aligns incentives, and gets us to people to try us a time, right? And so if I don't have good liquidity, I don't have good user experience, I don't have all the things that we talked about, people will try us that time and leave. So we're using it as a mechanism to reward early adoption. It will probably be baked into our referral system, the value.
You're going to have a referral system for enticing people to share?
Correct.
And then you're going to have the token airdrop. But you're saying there's no valuation assigned to the token. It's a loyalty card of sorts, like
it's
giving you lower
value. The value is determined by you and your use, and us by extension, the sense of making it valuable for you to trade on our platform. So if you're saying,
so when you were talking to investors, unless you want to tell me how much money you raised so far, which I'm open to hear, but let's say you raised $2 million and was part of your pitch to an investor to say, hey, we're going to have an Ocean token and you're going to get 100 million of them.
We don't hold any in reserve. We're not issuing big blocks to individuals. At the end of the day, it's a tradable discount token, the value of which is tied to how much you trade on our platform.
Okay.
So
it's not part of your VC structure. It's not part of anything with regard to that. Because that's my biggest worry when I look at a lot of these tokens, is I'm just like, these are weird.
It's not that dissimilar from what's called in the traditional financial world a maker rebate. So if you're a NASDAQ, as an example, you actually pay makers to execute your platform.
Right.
This is sort of a similar concept where we're incentivizing people to, on the margin, try our platform. The value of the tokens you hold is tied to how much you trade. If you don't want to trade on our platform for some reason, you can sell them to someone else who values trading on our platform. And the value that they assign to it will be whatever their in equilibrium should be, the amount that they save.
Okay. I know GDAX does maker orders for free, and I think the only other one I know is BitMEX will actually pay maker orders, and they'll take that from the taker order with a significant fee. Exactly. So are y'all going to have a maker-taker system in that way?
Yeah. So if you take a look at our fee structure, it's on theocean.trade. We have our fee structure up, and we'll you know, where you charge gas and plus 5 basis points for takers, we charge half that for makers, and for ocean token holders, you pay less. And again, our goal is over time, as we get more volume, we'll start to squeeze those fees, right? And so one thing we like about, you know, creating some sort of tradable discount is it helps align incentives of, you know, the, you know, that token valued by consumers directly. I can't do anything to inflate the price of it except providing a really good experience. My goal isn't to inflate the price of any token. It's to get people to have a really good experience and use our platform and product a lot. And if people really like it and are paying, you know, pennies for it, that's a net good thing for us in the long term. So it's part of our go-to-market strategy. We have more details on the structure on Medium because as an ERC-20 token, you'll be able to look at the token contract. You see our funnel address as a company. We don't hold any. We're not airdropping to any investors. It's not a financing gimmick, simply just a reward for early adopters. And we want to be the DEX that when people think about us, part of our name, the ocean, liquidity, products, best place to trade anything you could possibly want to trade. And so we want to reward and set people up for the long term of growing with us. That's our goal. I mean, I think our vision is not to just put a DEX out there and hope, knock on wood, people use it. It's we're going to do everything in our power to make sure that we give, not just for individual customers, but institutional customers, the place to come and trade financial assets of all types and do it in a trustless, no counterparty, instantly settling blockchain format that's easy to use. And that's the reason I got into space, right? Like, I'm somebody who's grown up in the financial system 10 years after the financial crisis. Last year, I worked on the strategic plan for Goldman Sachs for the next few years. That got announced. Bosses came to me and asked, what do you want to do next? I said, anything but not here. not to pick on them. But at some point, you know, there's a general, and I give credit to somebody who I'm slightly biased because I come from a little bit that world, but I'll say this, there's a recognition that the financial industry at large, that especially 10 years post the financial crisis, stuff still isn't exactly what you want it to be. And blockchain is this great opportunity to make that happen. That's why there's actually so much interest institutions to have in digital asset, R3, distributed ledger technologies. They go down one extreme of private blockchains, which, you know, in another session,
be failing miserably, according to the reports I heard.
I have lots of feelings and I, you know, knowledge on why that's failing. I don't think it's the right approach. I think our approach is, you know, prove a model that works in sort of like what's called the retail context, and do it in a decentralized, regulated, maximum scalable fashion that's much more attractive than a private blockchain. Write me a big check, institution A, and I'll connect you to institution B that's not attractive from an option from their perspective. But that's what everybody wants, right? Everybody wants trustless, fast, cheap execution of all financial things. That's what our end goal is. We're starting in this Ethereum-based, ZeroX-based world. We want to prove that that world works, and we want to grow into a much bigger world over time. We hope people come along for the ride with us.
Are you a, I'll finish with this. Are you a, I know you're talking about trading securities and traditional securities as well. Are you a proponent of tokenizing the world, as Pomp would say, or making, being able to go down the street and buy a piece of real estate based on a QR code or something, put it all on the blockchain? Is that something that you think is a reasonable future?
Tokenizing absolutely everything, I kind of struggle with sometimes. Again, it comes down to individual use cases. I'm a little bit sympathetic to always sometimes the refrain of, you know, blockchain is a problem looking for a solution, looking for a problem. I think in the financial services context in particular, you know, blockchain makes all the sense in the world, and tokenizing lots of things makes all the sense in the world. Does it make sense for me to tokenize my apartment and sell shares to 100 individuals? What happens if I come in arrears on my mortgage or on my rent? What happens?
100 or destroy people? It.
Yeah, exactly. Do 100 people come and take some fraction of the couch and my dog and like all the stuff? What happens in that world? I don't know. And so I think there's operational issues and custody issues and legal issues to solve. I think the legal issues are actually the most. I think when people talk about, you know, tokenizing illiquid things like real estate, what happens in that context? Lots of shares of ownership in a thing that's tough. I think it's a world worth exploring. And I can at least say for very liquid products, stocks, bonds, currencies, cryptocurrencies, utility tokens, the stuff's already digitized today. It's in a bad digital format. It's in a, for me, as somebody used to move products in a financial services context, had a support team of people calling other, banks on the phone, passing around Excels, like, still, and this is 2017, and so there's a recognition that lots of stuff, let's start with the low hanging fruit a little bit. We think lots of projects like Harbor that are thinking about, I think, the right real estate structures and the right legal framework make a lot of sense. We're excited to see how those projects develop and hopefully work with them. Comes down to cadence, timing, roadmap to adoption, not building the thing and they will come, but building the thing that's the world is ready for a little bit. And that's the way we think about it. We want to be a company that, folks know are working on these big problems with the right people in the right way. It's why the regulatory bit is so important, why working with regulators is important, why working with the rest of the industry is so important, and why coming to some sort of common ground is crucial for us. We're only as valuable as the things that we list and the people we work with. And particularly for me, as somebody who's worked in the industry, financial industry, for a long time, I like to think has a good reputation. You can talk to other people maybe and see. Part of this is on my own reputation too, especially some of the institutional partners that we'll have. It's not something I trifle with, particularly when you're talking about people's financial wealth at stake. And I think sometimes it gets lost a little bit in the debates on some of these platforms is people's livelihoods are at stake a little bit, something we take extremely seriously, and we want to increase adoption of the space by many more individuals and institutions, larger parts of the system. So we needed to sequence it in the right way, is the way I think about it.
Well, John, I appreciate you joining me. I have to say, I went into this not really having a lot of expectations. I just wanted to get the feel of somebody that is building a DEX, and I've long had a personal interest in anyone doing anything on top of the 0x protocol. I didn't get to do the ICO, but I literally bought it the first day it was on an exchange because to me, that project just made a lot of sense in terms of being a true utility token, and eventually that and purchases all the way down paid off from a trading sense. It seemed, at least from the sense of building things, they really attracted a lot of people like you to say, hey, we're going to adopt that. So I wanted to get that story, but what I've been pleasantly surprised by is getting someone that's creating a DEX that's focusing so much on liquidity. And, I talked to a lot of traders, probably hundreds of traders, and no one cares about anything else hardly except for liquidity. They love the idea of managing their own custody. No one wants a centralized exchange to become the next Cripsy or Mt. Gox or whatever. Everybody wants to maintain their own custody if they can, but they'll give custody to someone else if it means they get liquidity. So if you guys are going to be able to provide liquidity on your DEX, then that's amazing. And I'm happy to hear it, and I'm looking forward to trying it. So people can go to theocean.trade. Is that where the trading platform is going to exist as well?
That's where the trading platform exists. If you visit there today, you can sign up now. You'll go through our KYC AML flow. Most people will be signed up in less than 3 minutes. You'll be registered for our Ocean token airdrop, so you get permanently lower fees, and you're ready to go day one. We'll be launching early July. And like you said, our focus, number one focus at launch is liquidity. you know, we'll manage that liquidity over the course of summer. We'll expand, and we hope to be full of lots of surprises, partners and products and vision. And, you know, we're excited to be in the space in general. I'm excited to be in the space in general. You know, every day you know, the great thing about this space is there's so many different opinions, viewpoints, debates.
It's incredible.
And we're going to see who gets proven right or wrong, or everybody's right or everybody's wrong.
I've always told my personal friends that what amazes me most about crypto is you have this incredible arrangement between, you know, like your startup types from Silicon Valley and your Wall Street types and your anarchists and libertarians. Like, they just all come in a room and argue with each other.
That's right. I've never seen more anarchist paraphernalia or beret at the MIT Bitcoin conference earlier this year. It brings all types, and there's things that I learned from people like that that I didn't think about.
They approach this whole ecosystem differently based on their background.
Yeah, exactly. And I approach this ecosystem in a unique way based on my own background. So there's all things that we can learn from each other. And I think that's why a diverse team, diverse set of financiers, and diverse perspectives and partners is so important.
Just what we've been talking about today, what, you know, someone could be hearing, oh, I want to go hear about this DEX, and you're talking about KYC AML and being regulation friendly, and they're like, nope. And other people get that same response, and they're like, finally, you know, like someone's addressing it.
So, and I think, you know, to those folks who, you know, might not want to do KYC AML or might not want to be on a regulated platform, I would say two things. One is, you know, number one is, we're very conscious of, in terms of user information, in terms of working with regulators to do what needs to be done in a smart way. It doesn't mean just doing regulation for regulation's sake.
Yeah.
I spend most of my time actually now sitting with lawyers and regulators.
Sounds like a blast.
sometimes less than ideal. I'll admit a lot of paperwork, a lot of documentation, but we want to do that to make sure that we have a good experience for people. We're thought leaders in the industry. We make it easy for people to get into it. And I think that, you know, the second piece is from a regulatory perspective, it gives you a lot of benefits if you do some of this compliance stuff up front. The reason we're going to have liquidity is because we do KYC AML. The reason we will be able to off fiat to crypto is because of that. The reason we'll be able to list a lot of gold-backed coins, we'll be able to do derivatives and margin for others because we're compliant in the way we need to be compliant. Because we're a DEX, we don't have to be compliant in every fashion. There's a lot of benefits to it. But some of this early smart adoption of sort of the SEC's mandate gives individual traders a lot of benefits and solves a lot of the DEX problems. And I think that's a fundamental oversight that a lot of DEXs are making, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, it's super interesting to me. If y'all can accomplish a third of what you've talked about, then I'll be very impressed. Just the liquidity portion will be impressive for me. So I'm glad we had this talk, and I hope people will check out the platform. I'd be super interested to talk to you in 3 months or 6 months or something and see, like, how did things go compared to how you planned for them to go. Launches are always tough, I know. But it sounds like y'all been doing a lot of work and trying to put in as much up front as you can. So I'd love to have a follow-up conversation someday and discuss.
As would I. I encourage people to follow us at theocean.trade, and yes, we'll be launching early July.
Y'all have got newsletters, telegrams, Twitters, all that stuff, and I'll link it up in the show notes for people.
Yeah, and I'm super active on Telegram. You know, conferences, I'm more than happy to chat to individuals too. Like, we're big believers in customer service, and I'm a big believer in sort of that. You know, I love those kind of, not trying to any way, shape, or form put myself in this yet. But, you know, that sort of Bezos idea of, like, he still answers, I believe, something like 4 random emails a week. That customer.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Something like that. That's the way I am, is the way our company is. And so we're very open to feedback, different viewpoints, and we want to try to make as many people happy in this space as possible. It's really our objective.
Awesome. I appreciate you joining me, and hopefully we will catch up with you soon, and good luck with the launch.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Have a good one. Monuments crumble.